This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Place to Be Nation, welcome back to PTBN's NBA Team Podcast. This is a collective welcome back. Let us welcome back my co-host, Adam Murray. Oh, I am Andrew Reich, by the way. I'm one of the co-hosts, too. Not trying to put myself in front of him, but I am leaving the floor to Adam Murray for this one. I do have to stop you before you start talking, Adam, because there is breaking news. I wanted to be the good recapper for you as you were away from Alaska and now you're back in the United States. And then I'm thinking, all right, I'm almost at the end of all these like games. I've watched everything. The very last game before we recorded was the Kings and the Utah Jazz in Sacramento. And I'm thinking, nah, I can nod off and not care about this one. I wake up and Twitter is abuzz about a Sacramento Kings fan puking his guts out courtside, causing a 20-minute delay in the fourth quarter of the Kings-Jazz game. This is the most important NBA news that we have had so far. I need your opinion on this.
Okay, first, number one, I went to Alaska. Now I'm back in the United States, according to you?
Whatever. It's one of those. It's like Hawaii. It's like a friend of a friend.
Okay. Number two, it's good to see the Kings and their fans are already in midseason form.
Oh, I thought I was saying it was going to be good to see me. You can't see me, but
it's
not good to see me again.
It's good to be back. But yeah, the Kings are just, they are basically everything everyone said about them, except the, you know, the most delusional Kings fans who are looking through the, you know, the purplest colored glasses. This is exactly what we thought they would be. But just first, funny thing quickly, just about Alaska, as just harping back on the last live episode we did. I'm Google searching because it's winter, so most of the places are closed because it's a summer, you know, everything comes out open. And there's like, oh, I'm like, wonder if this place is open. And like, okay, so, you know, Google doesn't really have the best. So I'm like, okay, I gotta go to their Instagram because that's what we're all using. And like, oh, okay, let's go to this place. And who's on the Instagram page? Mario Chalmers was visiting that place. I'm like, yeah, you see, I knew Mario Chalmers, pride of Alaska.
Hometown like, hero Mario Chalmers. The Mario Miracle. Funny. Is there a picture of him shooting it over Memphis on the wall?
No, it was just him at the place, just, you know, saying thanks for the food. One of those headshot things. I'm like, oh, that's fucking Mario Chalmers of all people. Just,
I mean, look, you got to get your grift on no matter what. I mean, these guys in the early to late 2000s, they didn't get their NIL deals. You know, you got to get your grift on. Like I said,
it's not even just a grift on. It's just you're just the hometown kid. Like anywhere, even like where you are. Oh, that, you know, that kid made the D1. That kid made pro. Oh yeah, he comes home. He's a hero, and his you know, headshots all over the place. Mm-hmm. So no, Alaska was cool. Literally, it was negative degrees every. The winter came very fast, and
so it was like my Pelicans, just negative all over the place.
Oh, that team should just be relegated. But they're just like. I was gonna lead off with the Kings here, but
talking about bad teams. Let's just bundle them all together. But
let's just start with the Pelicans. Like
we had talked about this, and you're worried about that Luke Walton might not survive the end of November.
No. You can't get out of your Pelicans talk now. Okay. You've opened that little Pandora's box. So we're gonna go right into
Clippers.
It.
We beat the Clippers.
Everybody has their one good game, but the problem is like. Stan Van got ran out because the team didn't want to play for him, didn't want to play defense, didn't buy into his style. And everyone was sort of like, maybe he's just that old school coach and it's sort of different. But that roster is really weird. And then, like, you watch this team, like, even with Zion, they're still a lottery team.
What's their ceiling? Right. I agree with that.
It's a very expensive, just bad team, and I don't know how Griffin can last the year putting together that roster, especially with the Lonzo Ball deal. That's sort of just the nail in the coffin of how are you going to trade for such garbage, and unless there's a big all-star break trade deadline deal coming, there's no way this roster can possibly be competitive ever.
number one, that deal with Lonzo Ball is still under investigation because I think a lot of teams are butthurt that the Bulls and the Heat got the jump in on those deals before they can negotiate. So they felt like it was negotiated in bad faith, which it probably was, but it's one of those like wink, wink, nudge, nudge type of deals. It's always when the deal works out well for the team that signed those players where they all complain. Like nobody complained when Joakim Noah went to the Knicks and everybody knew about it. You know why? Because Joakim Noah sucked with the Knicks.
Oh, no. Remember 2016, the moratorium, you know, 1201. The first signing was Timofey Mozgov for 4 years, $64 million. Like, so you literally negotiated that deal in 45 seconds.
Yeah, nobody investigated Mitch Kupchak. Hey, I think you negotiated in bad faith. No, they're like, no, you go ahead and take Mozgov and Luol. Yeah. But back to the Pelicans, just to finish the Pelican talk. Jonas Valanciunas is actually playing really well. Like he's doing really well in daily fantasy and delivering like that. The team itself, Brandon Ingram's been okay, not perfect. He's still got a little bit of growing to do, literally. But he's rounding out into a terrific player, like a fringe superstar. I think if Zion was there and if he was healthy and fit, then along with Ingram and Valanciunas, I think they'd be in really good shape. The problem is that their point guard situation with Nikhil Alexander-Walker and Kyra Lewis as the backup, they have not developed at all as point guards to the point that Devontae Graham, who to me is not really a point guard, is playing the one. And they have no ball distribution. There's like, you know, Willie Green was an assistant with the Suns. And one of the things that's really helped the Suns, who've now, I don't know if you saw this, but they've won 11 in a row. Their thing is really ball movement and just being solid across the board. Willie Green does not have that scenario where they're just solid across the board. If they had Valanciunas and Zion playing together for the first time, I think you'd have a pretty formidable front court, but the back court is just absolute trash.
So Willie Green, is that going to be his style, playing Zion at the four and just having a front court and being and I having think so. Graham being at like a point guard? Or because
I
like,
think he would be a finesse four. Yeah,
last year it seemed like he was going to sort of be the Ben Simmons, just sort of a point forward, just a very big, the ball will run through him.
Yeah, sort of like Stan put the ball in his hand to just basically penetrate from the key or the elbow, right?
So they're going to go more traditional, and they just can't do it because he decides he still wants to eat.
Just eat, not something. I mean, we got Thanksgiving coming up, so it's troubling times for
some. So okay, so how can Griffin make it past all this?
I don't know. I gotta say this one too as another one also kind of involving the Kings. Did you see the one where him and Alvin Gentry almost got into a fight on the court?
Yeah, that's just like,
Gentry is now an assistant with the Kings, and there was a story going around that Griffin was telling executives in private conversations that he was basically throwing Alvin Gentry, who had been the former head coach of the Pelicans, under the bus. And he said, I gave him all the answers to the test and he still failed the test. And Gentry saw Griffin on the court, I think, when the Pels were playing the Kings, and Gentry goes, I guess you didn't fucking give Stan all the answers either, which was like a nod to like Stan Van Gundy getting fired after Gentry. And they almost got into like a physical confrontation, and they had to be broken up. And that sort of put the limelight on the spotlight on Griffin's failures and saying, hey, I think he's in trouble. I think he's got to go, blah, 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 blah. And it's starting to put a magnifying glass on basically Griffin as the one who's failing in New Orleans, not necessarily the coaches.
Kind of, because the same players. Thing,
yeah.
You know, like, look at, you know, we talk about the last episode of Portland with Neil Oshie, like, oh yeah, I'm not the problem. My team's not the problem. My roster's not the problem. It's the coach that's the problem. It's the players that's the problem. It's like, well, no, you're not getting the piece that are good. And you know, you can see with just New Orleans, just their drafting hasn't been good. Mm-hmm. The trades haven't been good. It was like you had every opportunity to bounce back with a rebuild, and it just seems like they decided to, like, let's try to build quick.
Yeah, they're bad. They're 3-15. I mean, the bottom line, they're not as bad as the Rockets. The Rockets have lost 14 in a row, but we are not talking about the Houston Rockets. We're putting a moratorium on that for now. We'll do that another day. But to finish up back all the way to the Kings.
The lead story.
What's 10 minutes into our episode. Well, you know, the only question I have with the puke guy is, first of all, there is no shame in asking for a barf bag. They do have them. I mean, even if you barf in the bag, security is going to probably get medical attention for you and tell you to go because the smell itself. The other thing is, like, you know, you're at courtside, you're camera side. It's a nice swank seat. You can go back to your seat. It's no shame in having an empty courtside seat. If you have to go to the bathroom and like puke your guts out, why do you have to fucking do it on the court? Is it that important that you see the fourth quarter of a 20-point blowout by the Jazz? Like, maybe he was. I need to know. Everyone knows the what. I need to know the why. I need to find this fan. And no, it was not Todd Weber, my bud from Place to Be Nation. So thankful for that. But I need to know why. Just... Was it a protest to the Kings? Has he seen so much bad basketball that when he saw good basketball by the Jazz that he puked in protest? Like, what was the reason for the puking?
Just learn to manage your alcohol. I don't know whether he was just a one-time, you know, he bought his on StubHub or is this a season ticket holder, but you don't need to go and have 10 drinks before the thing.
I felt terrible for the guy. I don't know if it's a ball boy. Some of those ball boys, you got to watch out, especially with these frantic paces with the steals. Cause like, you know how they like to, if somebody does like a sweat fall, they try to clean it up as the game is going, as there's a play on the other side, but you got to watch out. Like I saw one where Devin Vassell, he goes for a dunk for the Spurs and the ball boy didn't get out of the way and he had to basically dunk on the ball boy. Like, but I felt bad for this one having to clean up the puke.
But yeah, just going to the Kings and Luke Walton, right. We had said, he's not going to make it till Christmas. We said that the you know, gone fishing moratorium. We said the preseason.
But I just told you Thanksgiving. Can he make it through Thanksgiving?
And that's why I was like, I'm going to lead off with this because the Luke Walton watch is on, which just, you know, it started on day one. Like, oh, yeah, I'm not going to play Bagley. Well, it's like, yeah, we know because you want to win and you want to keep your job and you don't think he can win with your team. But then... why did your GM sign Alex Len? Why did he trade for Tristan Thompson? Why do you have this big lineup? And, oh, I'm just going to keep playing all guards.
Yeah, well, here's the thing, too. Like, he's so insistent on now playing Bagley in the starting lineup that when Mo Harkless went out, I even had to ask Todd this. Like, why did he do that? He put Shemezi Metu in there. Like, Shemezi Metu, to me, is like a two-way guy. Like, I don't think he's like a dependable NBA even bench guy, let alone a starter. No, I mean, no disrespect to him, but just no.
But it's just trying to.
They're doing the three guard thing. Their front court's actually good. Like when if you look at Rashawn Holmes and Harrison Barnes, they're killing it. They're having really good years together. It's the backcourt, and it's not necessarily Davion Mitchell struggling, even though he's not like popping off yet, and Tyrese Halliburton, whose numbers have kind of been the same as his rookie year. It's De'Aaron Fox. De'Aaron Fox is just not producing on a consistent level.
Yeah, and that's with the most of the guards who are now, they're trying to figure out the new rules and trying to how to play because, right. We have to go back to actually shooting as opposed to I can just run in. I could just do the Deron Williams. I'm just going to run into the and just head first, go into the thing and just get fouled out. Every single
and that
play.
Was one of Fox's thing. He was one of the league leaders in free throws made in attempts, and that's gone way down.
And then once that goes down, if that's what your game has been dependent upon, oh, I need to go work on my jump shot plus. Also, no fans in the arena. It was just like working out in a gym. So that's why all the shooting was through the roof last year because it was like practice. Okay, I'm open. I know how to shoot it. Now with the fans, everything is completely different. Yeah. And that's adjustment as well. But Luke Walton, we mentioned, has not ever been a good coach. He hasn't really developed many players. His strategy really hasn't worked. And it, you know, it seemed kind of like a desperation coaching hire to begin with.
And they already got rid of Lottie Diva. So it's one of those situations where I don't think even getting rid of the general manager, I don't remember the general manager's name, but I don't think getting rid of him is the best idea. Luke Walton's strategy has not worked. He's very offensively driven. Their defense is god awful. And he is somewhat to blame for that. But I do think it's some of it does – this one, the onus does go a little bit on the players. Like, I do think there is some situation where the players, if they had been more motivated – Tristan Thompson, who plays with the Kings, they had lost the game, and he just went off on this really weird tirade where he was, like, saying, you know, I don't need a coach to inspire me. This ain't no Glory Road shit. And I don't know – I guess he was trying to frame it in a way where he was not – he was trying to defend Luke Walton that it's not the coach's fault. But it's hard to do that when your opus of your rant is I don't need another coach to tell me what to do. Basically, it's not Luke Walton's fault that we're bad because coaches are meaningless anyway. It was weird. It was a weird rant.
It was very weird in the respect. It sounded like he was trying. It seemed like he was trying to just tap dance in his head of how do I get through this? Because he's just waiting to be bought out. He's waiting to be traded at the deadline because he's not going to finish that. He's going to go to a contender at the end.
He was dropping F bombs like all over the place on that thing. So that was a very clearly that was an honest like
point. Yeah, it was honest, but it was, you know, again, the I don't want to get fined by the league. I don't want to do, you know, I don't want to speak bad of men. Because you notice in Cleveland, he had never complained about his coach. Mm-hmm. In Boston, never complained about the coach. All of a sudden now, hey, what's up with your coach? He sucks. Oh, yeah, you know, Chris Webber ain't coming through that door. Coaches don't mean anything. You only say that if you're very bad. And, you know, yes, they want to make Luke Walton the scapegoat. Get coaches don't really mean anything other than minutes rotation, other than to keep your guys fresh and healthy. Because no coach says, okay, Kobe, you're just going to take the ball at the top of the key. You're going to dribble for 22 seconds and then take a 35-foot three. Okay, what do we do next play? Okay, Kobe, you're going to take it on the maybe the right side, dribble for 22 seconds, and then take another 30-footer off one leg. Okay. Yeah, then all the plays are, you know, are the same. It's just sort of the coaches nowadays are just, you know, the former players are just, let's get the flow down. Let's manage the game, timeout. Let's not get the other team on a run. It's not, let's practice formations. Let's practice plays. Like the Warriors just literally just run in a circle. That's mm-hmm. all.
Yeah, you're like, right. I think the word that they like to, I'm not super X's and O's. I think what they call it is continuity ball screen, where it's just, you just constantly run the same thing. And if that action doesn't work, you flow right into something else. And you just keep doing it with high ball screens with Curry and stuff. The thing with Curry, who he's on an MVP tear, like an MVP like tear, along with Nikola Jokic, fantasy god. I don't know if you've seen his stats, but he's just like, he can roll out. My friend Ryan said this. He could roll out of bed and like get 50 fantasy points. That's how good he's playing. Kevin Durant is looking great. You talked about the guards still figuring it out, and I think we can transition to that a little bit.
No, just one quick last question for
you. Okay, sure.
Which I think sort of might sum up this point about coaches. Remember back in the day, the point guard, let's say Gary Payton or whomever, would look over the coach, slowly move the ball up court, and then all of a sudden call a play at half court.
Mm-hmm.
Wait for the coach, wait to get the call from the coach. Do you ever see that anymore? Do you ever see the point guard look over at the coach to see what are we running?
No, because what it is a lot of these coaches, I think they instruct their players more in bundles where they say, I want you, we're going to have the thing is there's so many more possessions now. The game was a lot slower in the 90s and the 2000s. So you wanted to pound it in half court and you had that time to sit there and go, hey, what would you want me to run?
So yeah, if the coaches aren't
right, but you're right. There is less communication.
Yeah, if the coaches aren't calling in plays, everything. That's what Tristan Thompson means. Of what is a coach going to do? We know what to run. We know we're just going to do motion. We know I'm going to run the same screen and pick and roll because that's what our team is. Our team's a pick and roll team, so that's all we can. That's all I can do is pick and roll.
But to go back to the Warriors and Steve Kerr, for example, like I do think installing a good continuous offense is helpful. Like it is something that if people buy in, if people accept the roles and they can expand the roles within it, it can work. Like Mike Boone, I don't think it's a coincidence that Jason Kidd coached the Bucks and they were barely in the playoffs with Giannis and Middleton. And then Mike Budenholzer goes there and they win 60 games. What changed? The coaching changed.
Budenholzer just said, okay, Giannis, you're a point guard. The same thing, Indiana. Okay, Oladipo, you're now our point guard. New Orleans, okay, Zion, you're a point guard. Just make sure he gets the ball. Dallas, Luka, you're a point guard. You do whatever you feel like.
Yeah.
You know, Houston, Harden, you have the ball. Take it, whatever. You want to pass. If you want to shoot, shoot. We don't care. So, yeah, it's what it comes down to essentially is the team needs to buy in. And that's just going to the Warriors is the amazing, you know, the two rookies to watch. And especially like rookies just on a deep playoff team, like them.
My theory on them, because those three guys, Kuminga, Moses Moody, and James Wiseman, still out with that knee injury, or he's rehabbing or whatever. I feel like they're the break glass in case of emergency people, in case they get in the playoffs and their regular rotation that they've been successful with for the first month runs into a brick wall, and they're like, no, we need to throw an X factor at him. Let's put in Moody and see if he gets hot.
But like Jordan Poole, like you look at them.
He's hot.
You are not going to get shots. Mm-hmm. We know Stephon and Kerr and Clay and, you know, Andrew, they're going to get your shots. You're just going to be on the court. And if you can't play D, you're not going to get in the court. So if you buy into the playing the D and being as the movement, because everybody needs to be moving in that offense for it to work. So that's like, oh, I'm going to learn being good defensively first, then I'll get my scoring points, as opposed to somebody like, let's just say Houston. All right, go out there.
I said we're not talking about the Houston Rockets.
Just go do what you want.
The thing with kind of getting back to the coaching, though, in terms of the Warriors is that, you know, a lot of people are like throwing whimsical pros like about the Warriors' success, like, and they deserve it. Like they're like just absolutely killing right now. Oh, their record right now is 14-2. Curry is just killing, and pretty much every team he's playing. One of the games they lost was the Hornets, which was a really fun game because obviously Dell is one of the his dad is like one of the broadcast guys for the Hornets, so he's sitting right there like watching it, and the Hornets made a pretty good comeback at the end to take it. But almost every game I see, what it is that the Warriors, they either blitz you early with Curry, or they play rope-a-dope for three quarters, and then Curry gets really hot in the fourth quarter, and then they sort of defuse it. But here's what I was saying about the coaching is that I don't feel like Steve Kerr is running anything that's drastically different from what he did even in the years that they won championships. I feel like it's the same stuff. The difference is, like you had mentioned, Jordan Poole, he's gained body weight. He is developed as a shooter. They had a game where Curry took the game off against a decrepit Detroit Pistons team, and Jordan Poole went for 32 and they won the game. Draymond's still doing the same things he was doing last season when they just missed the playoffs. Like, what I'm trying to explain, Adam, is that I don't think they're running new wrinkles constantly. Then it's like, oh, presto change-o, we have a good team now. I feel like what it really is that the personnel is fitting better in the system where the plays that they had run before that weren't as good.
And the players just buy in. Everything comes down to the players buying in. And then, you know, like we see with just like my Boston, like, you know, there's a players only meeting. There's, you know, who's doing what. The players aren't really in. You know, you could say, no, this roster looks a little weird. The minutes, I don't understand how Ime Udoka is distributing the minutes. I'm not a fan of that either. But
yeah,
all you can do is you can't just say, well, I got to wait till Tatum heats up, or I got to wait till,
he is. I don't know if you've been checking it out, but like he's getting into the 30s almost on a regular basis, kind of climbing up there. They had an ESPN game against the Lakers, and it was the thing with the Lakers is like it's almost the opposite of the Warriors. Like, they play really well for three quarters. They sometimes like have halftime leads against good teams, you know, not just the Celtics. Like, they'll be playing the Bucks and they'll be right in it for three quarters. But as we had been talking about throughout the previews, they're such an older roster. They're one of the oldest. They're one of the most experienced rosters in the league, and they're one of the oldest. So when you have these guys that are out there, and you do have some young guns like Malik Monk, Talen Horton-Tucker coming back is going to help them. But you got Melo and you got Westbrook, and, you know, AD does have has his injury history of getting like small injuries every now and then. And when they get to the fourth quarter, it almost feels like the Lakers, who play at a really fast pace, they're like one of the fastest paced teams in the league, they just crap out. It's like they don't have an identity. Like, they don't know what to do. And the Celtics just ran roughshod over them in the fourth quarter. Tatum gets hot. And the Lakers, I think, are in a little bit of a flux. LeBron just got back from an abdominal injury where he missed a couple of weeks. So we'll see how they're a little bit of a to be continued. But back to the Celtics, I think Jaylen Brown going out with the hamstring did hurt them. But if you notice, they're still winning games against like the really bad teams. Like, they killed on the Thunder and a couple of teams like that. But like, I don't think they're completely out of it. Like, they're 9-8 right now. They're not terrible.
They're not terrible. They're not good. But again, I should say, you know, all judgment should be reserved till Christmas. This is just, you know, we we sort of mentioned it, that, you know, the guards are learning how to play, and they're slow. The numbers are slowly bouncing.
Yeah, Curry was the first one. Curry wasn't even affected. Like, it almost like boosted him. Of like, oh, you want to get tighter to me, huh? I'll just get this nice little screen. I'll curl off of it, and then I'll do a step back three. Like, yeah. it's almost like he just sort of like figured it out quicker. The other one that we worried about, the other one that everyone talked about was James Harden. Harden is starting to figure out. We talked about the Pelicans, who were really bad. He went to New Orleans, had by far the best game of his season so far. So I think he's starting to cook. Trae Young is starting to get there too. Like, he was in Atlanta and he played the Bucks, and he went off on the Bucks. He had 42, like, 8 rebounds, which he never does, 10 assists. He's starting to – I don't know really if there's, like, a similar strategy that everyone's looking at how Curry's doing it, because not everybody can do what Curry does. But I feel like a lot of guards are taking notes, and they're saying, oh, so if they're not going to call the flails and they're not going to give me the lean-ins, maybe I can – maybe if they – throw a new wrinkle in the game plan where they give me a higher ball screen, or be more effective, right?
Yeah, Curry just said, I'll just shoot jumpers again. And like Harden, I remember I watched a Brooklyn game. They were on a couple nights out there, and you have Harden. He does a 360, grabs the defender's arm and takes it with him, and he's like, "Why didn't I get a call for that?" Mm-hmm. And it's just like, "Well, because you literally hooked him, and the guy has his hands up, like, what are you doing to me?"
did you see the one where he got the hook, and the referee called it, and the whole bench of Brooklyn like celebrated, like, oh my god, I finally got one.
Yeah, then he legitimately got fouled, I think 2 to 3 possessions later, and then the ref's like, he didn't call that either. It's like, well, because the first one you did, the ref's like, well, I know you're doing this every time now.
Yeah,
you can't just keep doing it over and over and over and expecting to, well, eventually they'll, you know, no, you have to then change it up. And yeah, you can start driving to the hole after you learn to come back out again. And he's slowly doing, but just watching Brooklyn, and like, I don't know, without Kyrie, they just might be doomed.
I think they're really good though. Like, I mean, when you have Durant, who's just killing, like, his numbers are ridiculous, like, I'll look him up really, really quickly, but when it comes to Durant, he's beating down everyone he plays, even when he sits and it's just Harden. And if Harden's the focal point of the offense now that he's sort of like worked out the kinks with the play-ons and stuff, Durant, by the way, 28 points and 8 rebounds and 5 assists. My God.
Yeah, because he's like, what new rule change? I make it look so boringly easy. Like,
it's Kevin disgusting. Durant ain't worried about that. Kevin Durant wants you to try to hand check him, because he's just going to go up. He's 6'11", pretty much.
Yeah, like, but matter? Just like, well, maybe it's just, you know, the games I watched, they were uninspired or tired, or it was a back. I don't know the scenario, this, you know, the reason, but it's just like, these don't look like a team who wants to. Like, Chicago wants to win. You can say, oh, this team is good. Miami, okay, they want to win. The Warriors, Utah. Just watching Brooklyn, it's just like, maybe they're just the you know, sort of that Lakers, meh, we'll wait.
I'll tell you what I think it is. What I think it is that their defense is rock solid. Their rebounding is okay. Their points per game is middle of the pack. But they also play a really, really slow pace. Like, they're like, they're second to last in number of field goal attempts. They just don't. And because they have veterans, you know, Bruce Brown's there and they're using him a lot, but they don't have like a role man for Harden to use. Nick Claxton's been injured. So, they've been kind of playing just more of a stoic style, and you can be successful at that with superstars, and you have two on, you know, work active on your roster, and you can get away with that. Now, my concern, and I don't know how, relevant it's going to be because of Kyrie Irving's tendencies. Like, I don't know if he's just going to all of a sudden decide, all right, I'll get the jab and I'll go ahead and start playing, or he'll do that in, like, you know, Adam, like March. Like, I don't know when it's going to happen. But my concern is that when Kyrie Irving does come back, because I think it will happen, that they're going to want to try to ramp it up again to do that super fast style where they were like the most efficient offense of all time, and it's going to sputter at first. And that's the concern. Like, I don't know when that's going to happen, but basically Steve Nash, I got to give him a little bit of credit, and the people who are helping him out, like, they are purposefully slowing the game down because they don't want games to turn into like these, like, these rat races where everyone's just trying to score on fast breaks and stuff. So I think that's what you probably saw. You saw a Nets team that looked a little boring. But the Bulls, I agree with you with the Bulls. Like, they're a team that really wants to get after you defensively, including Zach LaVine and DeMar DeRozan. By the way, DeRozan is having a career year.
Yeah, we didn't say he wasn't going to have a good year. We just said the third year of his deal will become horribly unmanageable.
Oh, it could be a very much like a Kemba Walker deal with the Celtics. I almost directly compare it to that, where it's like, you know, Kemba Walker was an all-star his first year with Boston in that on that contract that he signed. But by the second year, you immediately could tell, ooh, this is not going to work out. And that might happen in 2023 with DeMar DeRozan. It's too hard to tell, but let's just worry about now. And the thing with DeRozan and LaVine, they're working out great. Alex Caruso is like, him and Marcus Smart are 1 and 2 in steals. I can't remember which one is leading the league in steals. I think it's Smart, but Caruso's like right there. I think Caruso and Ball have been a better addition than DeRozan, to be honest with you. They've been the X factors.
Well, yeah, because Lonzo Ball was the point guard they never had. We're always waiting for Chris Dunn and I forget who, Kobe White.
Adam, here's the thing, Lonzo Ball is the point guard that Lonzo Ball did not know he could be.
No, he always was.
He's better now. I'll say that.
But he tried to be a playmaker. When he was talked up, you know, like, well, you're going to be the playmaker, you're going to be the shooting. No, you can't shoot. You need to, you know, do what Rondo did and be like, oh, I'll just be great at everything else but shooting. Oh, I can do that here in Chicago. And then, oh, I'll get my shots eventually. I just know I shouldn't be taking 20 of them.
Yeah. The one thing with the Bulls that I did notice is that I don't know if it's necessarily a good comparison with the Eastern Conference teams that are sort of up there with them, but the Heat went to LA and they lost both games. They lost to the Clippers and the Lakers. Then the Bulls went to LA and they beat both of them. They absolutely laid out the Lakers. So I don't know what that necessarily means. Oh, looks like the Bulls are more, they can adapt better to different teams than the Heat. I'm not saying that. I do think the Heat are sort of getting into that point where they are undeniably good. They can definitely win the title. They're like 11-6 right now. They lost to the Wizards on Saturday, but they're at a point where they're not invincible. They're not a team, like, that's how people feel right now about the Warriors and even the Suns, who are 12-3, 11 games in a row, like I mentioned. That it is going to be really, really tough to beat them when they're on a roll. That's not the case with Miami. Chicago got laid out by the Warriors. I don't know if you saw that one.
Yeah, I saw that. But yeah. Also, you play the Heat a lot differently than you play the Bulls, and especially if they played the Heat first.
That is true.
The Heat are like, oh no, we're gonna try to beat you every game. We will play as if every game is a playoff game.
They are a proactive defensive team. They are looking for steals. Yes.
So yeah, it could easily be, oh yeah, they were just completely sort of spent, or even just mentally not up for Chicago, knowing, okay, we got two good teams coming. Which one are we gonna put all our energy into?
By the way, about the Heat, why is Jimmy Butler not affected by a lot of this? Is it just because he's a physical small forward?
Yeah, because there's a difference between physical and then trying to draw a foul. The same way, I know you don't watch soccer, but, oh, if you get, you know, if you're a physical player and you get taken down, okay, you get taken down. But if you're like the Brazilian team who just acts like you got shot, if somebody looks at you, then yeah, flopping. Which is just basically, remember, they crack down on flopping for, trying to draw charges. And then what happened? It went away for a while because the egregious people like Marcus Smart, they kept getting called on it. And then all of a sudden, okay, now I know I sort of really need to take the charge. And then we'll leave it to the big men to go take the charges.
The one that is a concern, and this was one we can always touch on later because I think it's not going to go away. But I did want to talk about it because it led to a pretty big event. What is the take foul? And for those who don't know, the take foul used to be called the Euro foul. because it was rampant in EuroLeague for a number of years until EuroLeague banned it because it was basically stopping the flow of the game. It's basically when you have defenders behind you and you deliberately foul you're like the trailer, and when the ball handler for the other team is like getting ready on a fast break, or he's got an easy layup or something, or a dunk or whatever, and you foul him at half court, or you hit him like right before they get to the 3-point line to take a three because you know they got the numbers. And the reason why it's not a clear path foul, which is in the NBA, is because you have defenders behind you. But it's basically like a cheap foul to try to stop the flow of the game. The reason I wanted to bring it up is because Markieff Morris did that to Nikola Jokic. Jokic took offense and gave him a nasty, like, elbow shiver to the back.
Well, Marcus Morris just hip-checked him. That foul
it was a take foul. It was a take foul. He did that on purpose so that he could stop him from getting a basket.
But it was a hard foul. There was no reason to do that.
Well, no, that's why he walked away from every. I know it's a hard foul when the guy who fouls him walks away, because that's like, I know it's going to get really bad if I try to stand in front of him like I'm trying to intimidate him or like stare him down or something. So I don't want to escalate it, so I'm going to try to walk away. Well, when he walked away, Jokic's like, oh, you want to fucking foul me? Here's one. And he chicken winged him right in the back, and Markieff Morris acted like he died.
I mean, yeah. And that's the, you know, the thing was, like, you watch it, it's like, oh, no, Jokic was provoked. Like, you believe Jokic attacked him? No, he was it wasn't just a cheap shot on Jokic's part. That was like what are you doing?
By the way, I don't have the day in front of me, but the Nuggets are going to the Nuggets are going to Miami on November 29th, next Monday. Fireworks? Or do you think the referees and Adam Silver and all that, the Keystone Cops, are all going to be like, nah, we got to watch this really close. We can't let it get out of hand.
It'll be all Keystone Cops, and also
because the Jokic brothers will be there do you know the story about the Jokic brothers?
They started a Twitter. That's all I know.
Nikola Jokic has two brothers that look almost like him. They look like Russian mafia men. Like, and they, like, you remember those, do you remember the two hitmen in Breaking Bad?
Yes.
Yeah, that's what they look like. And so, and then Marcus on Twitter went off about how, oh, he got my brother from behind. I'll take note of that and stuff like that. So they're thinking, oh, there's going to be catchback when they play again. So
no, there won't be anything.
So that was the only game where Nikola Jokic was not productive because he got suspended. But every other game, he's been awesome. The problem for the Nuggets is their offense, other than Nikola Jokic, is not awesome. They're 24th in points per game. They're last in free throws made, 25th when it comes to threes. They don't get offensive rebounds. Defensively, they're really, really good. They're efficient from two, which obviously makes sense because of all the points that Jokic helps produce from the five spot. But I do worry about their offense. Michael Porter Jr. has a flare up with his back again. Are you as worried about the Nuggets?
No, because they're just sort of waiting until Cousin Jamal comes back. And once he does, we'll see what this team is made of. But is there anything else I sort of missed? Any other talking points before we wrap this up?
The Cleveland Cavaliers are playing pretty well. They still have a winning record at this point, unless something changed it's 9-8. But the problem is they're getting a little knick-knacked by COVID and injuries more than others. I wouldn't even say knick-knacked. I'd say devastated. We talked about Kevin Love and Lauri Markkanen going into the COVID protocol. I think Kevin Love's already back, but he doesn't start, which just goes to show how much Cleveland thinks of him. Markkanen should be back really soon. Evan Mobley got an elbow injury, and they're being cautious with him because Mobley has been super productive as a rookie, but he's going to be out for like another week or so. And Colin Sexton tore his meniscus in his knee, and it turned out after Woj reported that he is going to be out for the season. So it's basically the Darius Garland show along with Ricky Rubio in the backcourt. By the way, I was thinking to myself when you went to Alaska, I was like, all right, I'll just see if anything weird happens. The very first night that you were gone, Ricky Rubio scores 37 points on the Knicks. I was like, that's not normal.
No, that isn't, but it's now.
What I'm saying is that the Cavaliers are good, but trepidation is ahead because they have a lot of injuries and issues that they have to overcome. But they're playing a lot better. Their offense is not not really good at all, but they can defend without fouling. They do not commit a lot of fouls. You have to score in front of them. So they're actually building a pretty good game plan on how to beat teams, even good teams. So the Cavaliers have been fun. I worry about the Grizzlies defense. The Grizzlies defense is one of the worst in the league, even though Ja Morant is still really productive. Jaren Jackson Jr. started to pick things up. Dylan Brooks is back, but I worry about the Grizzlies defense.
Yeah, because you know you swapped out Valanciunas for Adams, and it's like I said, we mentioned they just traded spare parts for what seems like the sake of trading spare parts, and is sort of they have to. Yeah, they came out hot, but that's just offense. Also, now they cool down, and you're like, is this really? I expect another trade to be made before the deadline with them too. I just don't see how they could go with this team as is, but they're also fun to watch.
Yeah, and we have mentioned the Hornets, how they just play like a rampant pace. The other thing is, like, I don't know if this is really too concerning because the Toronto Raptors are 8-9, which would be the 12 seed right now. Like, they're good. Here's my worry. I don't know if you've kept note of it. Their starters, four of their five starters, which are Fred VanVleet, Gary Trent Jr., Scotty Barnes, a rookie, a very good rookie, and OG Anunoby, who has an oblique injury now, they were playing at least 33 minutes a game each. That's a lot. Like, you're going to run those guys. I know they're young, and I know they have fresh legs, but you're going to run those dudes ragged if you want to make the playoffs.
I don't know if they're going to make the
That's why I don't think it's a huge concern, because I don't think they're going to be in the hunt. Like, I think
it's just another team. Just wait to see who offers something for Dragic and what you can move them for. So it's sort of, you know, bide your time and give them the minutes now to let's, you know, this is sort of an on-court practice and you guys are winning and you're sort of hot. Go out there and do it. Okay, eventually, yeah, we'll lessen it once we start losing. And then, you know, like the old Houston and Oklahoma City, oh, yeah, we're down by 20 at the half. Okay, let's just get the bench in for the second half of the game. They're not at that point yet, but eventually they will be. So let's just sort of ride it.
Where is your oblique muscle? Oh, actually, I'm wrong. Who was I thinking about the oblique? It was somebody else. I apologize to OG Anunoby. It's a hip pointer. He has a hip pointer.
Oh, those are nagging. That's a tough injury for an NBA player.
It's Max Kleber. Maxi Kleber has an oblique injury. They don't know when he's going to be back. Same with Anunoby. Dallas, on the other hand, talking about Kleber. Luka, here's where we talk about the coaching, and maybe coaching doesn't matter that much. Everybody was worried about how Jason Kidd doesn't know how to coach defense. Like, he was terrible in Milwaukee coaching defense. You know, I don't think the defense is great in Dallas, but I'm looking at the record and I'm looking at Luka's production, and it's about the same as they were under Rick Carlisle. So, I mean, what changed? I mean, it feels like nothing changed.
Luka's numbers are up and but the same, but that's just him.
Their net rating as a team is like -2, which is not good.
That's sort of why Luka's carrying them as he usually does. It's the Dallas situation. It's like we mentioned, there's nobody around him that's good at all. So you have to sort of overachieve where they are. And I remember early in the season, Jason Kidd was like, oh yeah, they had a team captain's meeting. And they said part of that, they want all the players to play. So it's like, it was hard trying to find, you know, 5 minutes for all the bench, the end of the bench, but we did it. So, you know, like most things, you sort of hope, okay, you had your first run as a coach. It didn't work. Why didn't it work? Start to make changes based upon what you saw, because it's a lot different going, you know, Kidd just went, didn't he go straight from nowhere to being a coach? He wasn't an assistant.
He had just retired. Right. He had just retired with the Knicks.
So, yeah, all of a sudden,
they just hired him out of nowhere with the Nets when they had Pierce and Garnett and all them guys.
Yeah, it's a lot different than, you know, being on the court the whole time. So, you know, the same football. Look at Bill Belichick. He was horrible in Cleveland. All of a sudden, okay, I know what I did wrong. The second go around, you sort of try to piece things together. It's too early to tell on Dallas because, again, you know, with the powerhouse of Maxi Kleber and how essential he is to that roster, it's
I'll say two things for the Mavs. The non-Lucas, the Lucanaires. Kristaps Porzingis has actually had some good games, like singular good games. Like, not every night. Like, that's our concern. Like, he can't produce every night. But I have seen a couple of occasions where he gets like 28-7 or like 30-8. Jalen Brunson also is playing really, really well. Like, he helps them out off the bench, like, immensely. Dwight Powell's still in there at center. I still don't know why. When it comes to the West, like, Adam, when I kind of glance at it, it kind of – and I'm not saying we're getting into that normalcy mode where it's like, oh, it's the first 20 games or it's – which is one-fourth of the season. We kind of have a good idea of what our – what the team – what it's going to look like. I don't want to get that far ahead of it. But when I look at the Western Conference standings, it looks about what people thought it would be. The only one that I would guess is the outlier is that the Warriors have just – lapped over the Suns and the Jazz, who were weren't they the top two seeds in the West last year? I think they were.
Oh, that was so last
year. Utah and Phoenix. And the Clippers, they're streaking. They're doing okay. Paul George is probably the most underappreciated player so far this season. Like, nobody is talking about how good he is this year. The East is weird. The East is one, and it's mainly because the Wizards are playing really well.
The Wizards are playing well, and Atlanta's not. So that's the only.
Atlanta's offense is getting a lot better. So they're starting to climb back up there. And Milwaukee at the 9 spot, I'm not worried. Are you?
No, because that's the 9 spot, still the playoffs. That's why I don't even think anything about it.
Yeah, but I don't think Milwaukee's going to be comfortable there. Like, I think they want to have home court. They want to be a four or higher.
In time, they're just hungover and
you know, Giannis did have probably the most efficient game I've seen this season. I think it was against the Lakers on ESPN, 47 points and 8 rebounds, just like absolutely destroyed the Lakers on national television. So I mean, Giannis is putting the work in, but overall it feels like things are normalizing, but the catch up shows that there are some weird goings on and there are some really interesting things involving teams that you didn't expect, mainly the Cavs, the Wizards, the Hawks struggling and also the San Antonio Spurs. Adam, I hate to break this, are not going to make the playoffs this year.
They're not the worst team of all time.
They're worse than the Oklahoma City Thunder, like I predicted.
No, you said the Spurs will be the worst, and then like you realize the Rockets are still
a
team.
I did say that, but I also said they're going to be worse than the Thunder. That was the other thing I said, and that's true. So we're even.
All
they're
right.
They're not as bad as the Rockets, though.
For Andrew Reich, I'm Adam Murray. Have a good one.
See you later.